Lung abandoned all his other fields and stayed the day out at this one, dipping water from the moat to pour upon the greedy soil. This year, for the first time, he sold his grain as soon as it was harvested, and when he felt the silver upon his palm, he gripped it hard in defiance. He would, he told himself, in spite of gods and drought, do that which he had determined. His body he had broken, and his sweat he had spilled for this handful of silver, and he would do what he would with it. And he hurried to the house of Huang, and he met the land agent there, and he said without ceremony, I have that with which to buy the land adjoining mine by the moat. Now Wang Lung had heard here and there that for the house of Huang it had been a year verging upon poverty. The old lady had not had her dole of opium to the full for many days, and she was like an old tigress in her hunger, so that each day she sent for the agent, and she cursed him and struck his face with her fan, screaming at him, And are there not acres of land left yet? Until he was beside himself. He had even given up the monies which ordinarily he held back from the family transactions for his own use, so beside himself had he been. And as if this were not enough, the old lord took yet another concubine, a slave who was the child of a slave who had been his creature in her youth, but who was now wed to a manservant in the house because the old lord's desire for her failed before he took her into his room as concubine. This child of the slave, who was not more than 16, he now saw with fresh lust. For as he grew old and infirm and heavy with flesh, he seemed to desire more and more women who were slight and young, even to childhood, so that there was no slaking his lust. As the old mistress with her opium, so he with his lusts, and there was no making him understand there was not money for jade earrings for his favorites, and not gold for their pretty hands. He could not comprehend the words, no money, who all his life had but to reach out his hand and fill it as often as he would. And seeing their parents thus, the young lords shrugged their shoulders and said, There must still be enough for their lifetime. They united in only one thing, and this was to berate the agent for his ill management of the estates, so that he who had once been oily and unctuous, a man of plenty and of ease, was now become anxious and harried, and his flesh gone, so that his skin hung upon him like an old garment. Neither had heaven sent rain upon the fields of the house of Huang, and there, too, there were no harvests. And so when Wang Lung came to the agent, crying, I have silver, it was as though one came, saying to the hungry, I have food. The agent grasped at it. And where before there had been dickering and tea-drinking, now the two men spoke in eager whispers, and more quickly than they could speak whole words, the money passed from one hand to the other, and the papers were signed and sealed, and the land was Wang Lung's. And once again Wang Lung did not count the passing of silver, which was his flesh and blood, a hard thing. He bought with it the desire of his heart. He had now a vast field of good land, for the new field was twice as large as the first. But more to him than its dark fertility was the fact that it had belonged once to the family of a prince. And this time he told no one, not even Olan, what he had done. Month passed into month, and still no rain fell. As autumn approached, the clouds gathered unwillingly in the sky, small, light clouds, and in the village street one could see men standing about idle and anxious, their faces upturned to the sky, judging closely of this cloud and that, discussing together as to whether any held rain in it. But before sufficient clouds could gather for promise, a bitter wind rose out of the northwest, the acrid wind of the distant desert, and blew the clouds from the sky, as one gathers dust from a floor with a broom. And the sky was empty and barren. And the stately sun rose each morning and made its march and set solitary each night, and the moon in its time shone like a lesser sun for clearness. From his fields Wang Lung reaped a scanty harvest of hearty beans, And from his cornfield, which he had planted in despair when the rice beds had yellowed and died before ever the plants had been set into the watered field, he plucked short, stubby ears with the grain scattered here and there. There was not a bean lost in the threshing. He set the two little boys to sifting the dust of the threshing floor between their fingers, after he and the woman had flailed the bean vines. And he shelled the corn upon the floor in the middle room, watching sharply every grain that flew wide. When he would have put the cobs away for fuel, his wife spoke out,
"No, do not waste them in burning. I remember when I was a child in Shadong.
When years like this came, even the cobs we ground and ate, it is better than grass." When she had spoken, they all fell silent, even the children. There was foreboding in these strange, brilliant days when the land was failing them. Only the girl child knew no fear. For her there were the mother's two great breasts as yet filled for her needs. But Olan, giving her suck, muttered, "Eat, poor fool, eat while there is yet that which can be eaten." And then, as though there were not enough evil, Olan was again with child. And her milk dried up, and the frightened house was filled with the sound of a child continually crying for food. If one had asked Wang Lung, "And how are you fed through the autumn?" he would have answered, "I do not know. A little food here and there." But there was none to ask him that. None asked of any other in the whole countryside, "How are you fed?" None asked anything except of himself, "How shall I be fed this day?" And parents said, "How shall we be fed, we and our children?" Now Wang Lung's ox he had cared for as long as he could. He had given the beast a bit of straw and a handful of vines as long as these lasted, and then he had gone out and torn leaves from the trees for it until winter came and these were gone. Then, since there was no land to plough, since seed, if it were planted, only dried in the earth, and since they had eaten all their seed, he turned the ox out to hunt for itself, sending the eldest boy to sit upon its back all day and hold the rope passed through its nostrils, so that it would not be stolen. But latterly he had not dared even to do this, lest men from the village, even his neighbors, might overcome the lad and seize the ox for food and kill it. So he kept the ox on the threshold until it grew lean as its skeleton. But there came a day when there was no rice left and no wheat left, and there were only a few beans and a meager store of corn, and the ox lowed with its hunger, and the old man said,
"We will eat the ox next."
Then Wang Lung cried out, for it was to him as though one had said, "We will eat a man next." The ox was his companion in the fields, and he had walked behind and praised it and cursed it as his mood was. And from his youth he had known the beast, when they had bought it a small calf. And he said, "How can we eat the ox? How shall we plough again?" But the old man answered, tranquil enough,
"Well, and it is your life or the beast's, and your son's life or the beast's. And a man can buy an ox again more easily than his own life."
But Wang Lung would not that day kill it, and the next day passed, and the next, and the children cried out for food, and they would not be comforted. And Olan looked at Wang Lung, beseeching him for the children, and he saw at last that the thing was to be done. So he said roughly, "Let it be killed then, but I cannot do it." He went into the room where he slept, and he laid himself upon the bed, and he wrapped the quilt about his head so that he might not hear the beast's bellowing when it died. Then Olan crept out, and she took a great iron knife she had in the kitchen, and she cut a great gash in the beast's neck, and thus she severed its life. And she took a bowl and caught its blood to cook for them to eat in a pudding, and she skinned and hacked to pieces the great carcass. And Wang Lung would not come out until the thing was wholly done and the flesh was cooked and upon the table. But when he tried to eat the flesh of his ox, his gorge rose, and he could not swallow it, and he drank only a little of the soup. And Olan said to him, "An ox is but an ox, and this one grew old. Eat, for there will be another one day, and far better than this one." Wang Lung was a little comforted then, and he ate a morsel, and then more, and they all ate. But the ox was eaten at last, and the bones cracked for the marrow, and it was all too quickly gone, and there was nothing left of it except the skin, dried and hard and stretched upon the rack of bamboo Olan had made to hold it spread. At first there had been hostility in the village against Wang Lung, because it was supposed that he had silver, which he was hiding, and food stored away. His uncle, who was among the first to be hungry, came importuning to his door, and indeed the man and his wife and his 7 children had nothing to eat. Wang Lung measured unwillingly into the skin of his uncle's robe a small heap of beans and a precious handful of corn. Then he said with firmness, "It is all I can spare, and I have first my old father to consider, even if I had no children." When his uncle came again, Wang Lung cried out, "Even filial piety will not feed my house," and he sent his uncle empty away. From that day his uncle turned against him like a dog that has been kicked, and he whispered about the village in this house and in that, "My nephew there, he has silver and he has food, but he will give none of it to us, not even to me and to my children, who are his own bones and flesh. We can do nothing but starve." And as family after family finished its store in the small village and spent its last coin in the scanty markets of the town, and the winds of winter came down from the desert cold as a knife of steel and dry and barren, the hearts of the villagers grew distraught with their own hunger and with the hunger of their pinched wives and crying children. And when Wang Lung's uncle shivered about the streets like a lean dog and whispered from his famished lips, "There is one who has food, there is one whose children are fat still," the men took up poles and went one night to the house of Wang Lung and beat upon the door. And when he had opened to the voices of his neighbors, they fell upon him and pushed him out of the doorway and threw out of the house his frightened children. And they fell upon every corner and they scrabbled every surface with their hands to find where he had hidden his food. Then when they found his wretched store of a few dried beans and a bowl full of dried corn, they gave a great howl of disappointment and despair, and they seized his bits of furniture, the table and the benches and the bed where the old man lay frightened and weeping. Then Olan came forward and spoke, and her plain, slow voice rose above the men. "Not that! Not that yet!" she called out. "It is not yet time to take our table and the benches and the bed from our house. You have all our food. But out of your own houses you have not sold yet your table and your benches. Leave us ours. We are even. We have not a bean or a grain of corn more than you. No, you have more than we now, for you have all of ours. Heaven will strike you if you take more. Now we will go out together and hunt for grass to eat and bark from the trees, you for your children and we for our 3 children, and for this 4th who is to be born in such times." She pressed her hand to her belly as she spoke, and the men were ashamed before her and went out one by one, for they were not evil men except when they starved. One lingered, that one called Ching, a small, silent, yellow man with a face like an ape's in the best of times, and now hollowed and anxious. He would have spoken some good word of shame, for he was an honest man, and only his crying child had forced him to evil. But in his bosom was a handful of beans he had snatched when the store was found, and he was fearful lest he must return them if he spoke at all. And so he only looked at Wang Lung with haggard, speechless eyes, and he went out. Wang Lung stood there in his dooryard where year after year he had threshed his good harvests, and which had lain now for many months idle and useless. There was nothing left in the house to feed his father and his children, nothing to feed this woman of his, who besides the nourishment of her own body had this other one to feed into growth, this other one who would, with the cruelty of new and ardent life, steal from the very flesh and blood of its mother. He had an instant of extreme fear. Then into his blood, like soothing wine, flowed this comfort. He said in his heart, "They cannot take the land from me. The labor of my body and the fruit of the fields I have put into that which cannot be taken away. If I had the silver, they would have taken it. If I had bought with the silver to store it, they would have taken it all. I have the land still, and it is mine." 9. Wang Lung, sitting at the threshold of his door, said to himself that now, surely, something must be done. They could not remain here in this empty house and die. In his lean body, about which he daily wrapped more tightly his loose girdle, there was a determination to live. He would not thus, just when he was coming into the fullness of a man's life, suddenly be robbed of it by a stupid fate. There was such anger in him now as he often could not express. At times it seized him like a frenzy, so that he rushed out upon his barren threshing floor and shook his arms at the foolish sky that shone above him, eternally blue and clear and cold and cloudless. "Oh, you are too wicked, you old man in heaven!" he would cry recklessly. And if for an instant he were afraid, he would the next instant cry sullenly, "And what can happen to me worse than that which has happened?" Once he walked, dragging one foot after another in his famished weakness, to the temple of the earth, and deliberately he spat upon the face of the small, imperturbable god who sat there with his goddess. There were no sticks of incense now before this pair, nor had there been for many moons, and their paper clothes were tattered and showed their clay bodies through the rents. But they sat there unmoved by anything. And Wang Lung gnashed his teeth at them and walked back to his house, groaning, and fell upon his bed. They scarcely rose at all now, any of them. There was no need, and fitful sleep took the place, for a while at least, of the food they had not. The cobs of the corn they had dried and eaten, and they stripped the bark from trees, and all over the countryside people were eating what grass they could find upon the wintry hills. There was not an animal anywhere. A man might walk for a handful of days and see not an ox, nor an ass, nor any kind of beast or fowl. The children's bellies were swollen out with empty wind, and one never saw in these days a child playing upon the village street. At most, the two boys in Wang Long's house crept to the door and sat in the sun, the cruel sun that never ceased its endless shining. Their once rounded bodies were angular and bony now, sharp small bones like the bones of birds, except for their ponderous bellies. The girl child never even sat alone, although the time was past for this, but lay uncomplaining hour after hour wrapped in an old quilt. At first the angry insistence of her crying had filled the house, but she had come to be quiet, sucking feebly at whatever was put into her mouth and never lifting up her voice. Her little hollowed face peered out at them all, little sunken blue lips like a toothless old woman's lips, and hollow black eyes peering. This persistence of the small life in some way won her father's affection, although if she had been round and merry as the others had been at her age, he would have been careless of her for a girl. Sometimes looking at her, he whispered softly, "Poor fool, poor little fool." And once when she essayed a weak smile with her toothless gums showing, he broke into tears and took into his lean hard hand her small claw and held the tiny grasp of her fingers over his forefinger. Thereafter he would sometimes lift her, all naked as she lay, and thrust her inside the scant warmth of his coat against his flesh, and sit with her so by the threshold of the house, looking out over the dry, flat fields. As for the old man, he fared better than any, for if there was anything to eat, he was given it, even though the children were without. Wang Lung said to himself proudly that none should say in the hour of death he had forgotten his father. Even if his own flesh went to feed him, the old man should eat. The old man slept day and night and ate what was given him, and there was still strength in him to creep about the dooryard at noon when the sun was warm. He was more cheerful than any of them, and he quavered forth one day in his old voice that was like a little wind trembling among cracked bamboos,
"There have been worse days, there have been worse days. Once I saw men and women eating children."
"There will never be such a thing in my house," said Wang Long, in extremest horror.
There was a day when his neighbor Ching, worn now to less than the shadow of a human creature, came to the door of Wang Long's house, and he whispered from his lips that were dried and black as earth,
"In the town the dogs are eaten, and everywhere the horses and the fowls of every sort. Here we have eaten the beast that ploughed our fields and the grass and the bark of trees. What now remains for food?"
Wang Long shook his head hopelessly. In his bosom lay the slight, skeleton-like body of his girl-child, and he looked down into the delicate, bony face, and into the sharp, sad eyes that watched him unceasingly from his breast. When he caught those eyes in his glance, invariably there wavered upon the child's face a flickering smile that broke his heart. Ching thrust his face nearer.
"In the village they are eating human flesh," he whispered. "It is said your uncle and his wife are eating. How else are they living and with strength enough to walk about? They, who it is known, have never had anything."
Wang Lung drew back from the death-like head which Ching had thrust forward as he spoke. With the man's eyes closed like this, he was horrible. Wang Lung was suddenly afraid with a fear he did not understand. He rose quickly as though to cast off some entangling danger. "We will leave this place," he said loudly. "We will go south. There are everywhere in this great land people who starve. Heaven, however wicked, will not at once wipe out the sons of Han." His neighbor looked at him patiently.
"You are young," he said sadly. "I am older than you, and my wife is old, and we have nothing except one daughter. We can die well enough."
"You are more fortunate than I," said Wang Long. "I have my old father and these three small mouths and another about to be born. We must go, lest we forget our nature and eat each other as the wild dogs do."
And then it seemed to him suddenly that what he said was very right, and he called aloud to Olan, who lay upon the bed day after day without speech, now that there was no food for the stove and no fuel for the oven.
"Come, woman, we will go south."
There was cheer in his voice such as none had heard in many moons, and the children looked up, and the old man hobbled out of his room, and Olan rose feebly from her bed and came to the door of their room, and, clinging to the doorframe, she said,
"It is a good thing to do. One can at least die walking."
The child in her body hung from her lean loins like a knotty fruit, and from her face every particle of flesh was gone, so that the jagged bones stood forth rock-like under her skin.
"Only wait until tomorrow," she said. "I shall have given birth by then. I can tell by this thing's movements in me."
"Tomorrow, then," answered Wang Long.
And then he saw his wife's face, and he was moved with a pity greater than any he had had for himself. This poor creature was dragging forth yet another.
"How shall you walk, you poor creature?" he muttered.
And he said unwillingly to his neighbor Ching, who still leaned against the house by the door,
"If you have any food left, for a good heart's sake, give me a handful to save the life of the mother of my sons, and I will forget that I saw you in my house as a robber."
Ching looked at him ashamed, and he answered humbly,
"I have never thought of you with peace since that hour. It was that dog your uncle who enticed me, saying that you had good harvests stored up. Before this cruel heaven, I promise you that I have only a little handful of dried red beans buried beneath the stone of my doorway. This I and my wife placed there for our last hour, for our child and ourselves, that we might die with a little food in our stomachs.
But some of it I will give to you.
And tomorrow, go south if you can. I stay, I and my house. I am older than you, and I have no son, and it does not matter whether I live or die."
And he went away, and in a little while he came back, bringing tied in a cotton kerchief a double handful of small red beans, moldy with the soil. The children clamored about at the sight of the food, and even the old man's eyes glistened, but Wang Lung pushed them away for once, and he took the food into his wife as she lay, and she ate a little of it bean by bean, unwilling except that her hour was upon her, and she knew that if she had not any food she would die in the clutches of her pain. Only a few of the beans did Wang Lung hide in his own hand, and these he put into his own mouth, and he chewed them into a soft pulp, and then putting his lips to the lips of his daughter, he pushed into her mouth the food, and watching her small lips move, he felt himself fed. That night he stayed in the middle room. The two boys were in the old man's room, and in the third room Olan gave birth alone. He sat there as he had sat during the birth of his firstborn son and listened. She would not even yet have him near her at her hour. She would give birth alone, squatting over the old tub she kept for the purpose, creeping about the room afterwards to remove the traces of what had been, hiding as an animal does the birth stains of its young. He listened intently for the small, sharp cry he knew so well, and he listened with despair. Male or female, it mattered nothing to him now. There was only another mouth coming, which must be fed.
"It would be merciful if there were no breath," he muttered,
and then he heard the feeble cry, how feeble a cry, hang for an instant upon the stillness.
"But there is no mercy of any kind in these days," he finished bitterly, and he sat listening.
There was no second cry, and over the house the stillness became impenetrable. But for many days there had been stillness everywhere, the stillness of inactivity, and of people each in his own house waiting to die. This house was filled with such stillness. Suddenly Wang Lung could not bear it. He was afraid. He rose and went to the door of the room where Olan was, and he called into the crack, and the sound of his own voice heartened him a little. "You are safe," he called to the woman. He listened. Suppose she had died as he sat there. But he could hear a slight rustling. She was moving about, and at last she answered, her voice a sigh. "Come." He went in then, and she lay there upon the bed, her body scarcely raising the cover. She lay alone. "Where's the child?" he asked. She made a slight movement of her hand upon the bed, and he saw upon the floor the child's body.
"Dead,"
he exclaimed.
"Dead,"
she whispered. He stooped and examined the handful of its body, a wisp of bone and skin, a girl. He was about to say, "But I heard it crying, alive." And then he looked at the woman's face. Her eyes were closed, and the color of her flesh was the color of ashes, and her bone stuck up under the skin. A poor, silent face that lay there, having endured to the utmost. And there was nothing he could say. After all, during these months he had had only his own body to drag about. What agony of starvation this woman had endured, with the starved creature gnawing at her from within, desperate for its own life. He said nothing, but he took the dead child into the other room and laid it upon the earthen floor and searched until he found a bit of broken mat, and this he wrapped about it. The round head dropped this way and that, and upon the neck he saw two dark bruised spots. But he finished what he had to do. Then he took the roll of matting, and going as far from the house as he had strength, he laid the burden against the hollowed side of an old grave. This grave stood among many others, worn down and no longer known or cared for, on a hillside just at the border of Wang Long's western field. He had scarcely put the burden down before a famished, wolfish dog hovered almost at once behind him, so famished that although he took up a small stone and threw it and hit its lean flank with a thud, the animal would not stir away more than a few feet. At last Wang Long felt his legs sinking beneath him, and covering his face with his hands, he went away. "It is better as it is," he muttered to himself. And for the first time was wholly filled with despair. The next morning, when the sun rose unchanging in its sky of varnished blue, it seemed to him a dream that he could ever have thought of leaving his house with these helpless children and this weakened woman and this old man. How could they drag their bodies over 100 miles, even to plenty? And who knew whether or not even in the south there was food? One would say there was no end to this brazen sky. Perhaps they would wear out all their last strength, only to find more starving people, and these strangers to them as well. Far better to stay where they could die in their beds. He sat desponding on the threshold of the door and gazed bleakly over the dried and hardened fields from which every particle of anything which could be called food or fuel had been plucked. He had no money. Long ago the last coin was gone. But even money would do little good now, for there was no food to buy. He had heard earlier that there were rich men in the town who were hoarding food for themselves and for sale to the very rich. But even this ceased to anger him. He did not feel this day that he could walk to the town even to be fed without money. He was, indeed, not hungry. The extreme gnawing in his stomach, which he had had at first, was now past, and he could stir up a little of the earth from a certain spot in one of his fields and give it to the children without desiring any of it for himself. This earth they had been eating in water for some days. Goddess of Mercy earth, it was called, because it had some slight nutritious quality in it, although in the end it could not sustain life. But made into a gruel, it allayed the children's craving for a time and put something into their distended, empty bellies. He steadfastly would not touch the few beans that Olan still held in her hand, and it comforted him vaguely to hear her crunching them, one at a time, a long time apart. And then, as he sat there in the doorway, giving up his hope and thinking with a dreamy pleasure of lying upon his bed and sleeping easily into death, someone came across the fields, men walking toward him. He continued to sit as they drew near, and he saw that one was his uncle, and with him were 3 men whom he did not know. "I have not seen you these many days," called his uncle with loud and affected good humor. And as he drew nearer, he said in the same loud voice, "And how well you have fared! And your father, my elder brother, he is well?" Wang Long looked at his uncle. The man was thin, it is true, but not starved, as he should be. Wang Long felt in his own shriveled body the last remaining strength of life gathering into a devastating anger against this man, his uncle. "How you have eaten! How you have eaten!" he muttered thickly. He thought nothing of these strangers or of any courtesy. He saw only his uncle with flesh on his bones still. His uncle opened wide his eyes and threw up his hands to the sky. "Eaten!" he cried. "If you could see my house, not a sparrow even could pick up a crumb there. My wife, do you remember how fat she was, how fair and fat and oily her skin? And now she is like a garment hung on a pole, nothing but the poor bones rattling together in her skin. And of our children, only 4 are left, the 3 little ones gone, gone. And as for me, you see me." He took the edge of his sleeve and wiped the corner of each eye carefully. "You have eaten," repeated Wang Long dully. "I have thought of nothing but of you and of your father, who is my brother," retorted his uncle briskly. "And now I prove it to you. As soon as I could, I borrowed from these good men in the town a little food on the promise that
with the strength it gave me, I would help them to buy some of the land about our village. And then I thought of your good land first of all, you, the son of my brother. They have come to buy your land and to give you money, food, life."
His uncle, having said these words, stepped back and folded his arms with a flourish of his dirty and ragged robes. Wang Long did not move. He did not rise nor in any way recognize the men who had come. But he lifted his head to look at them, and he saw that they were indeed men from the town dressed in long robes of soiled silk. Their hands were soft and their nails long. They looked as though they had eaten, and blood still ran rapidly in their veins. He suddenly hated them with an immense hatred. Here were these men from the town, having eaten and drunk, standing beside him whose children were starving, and eating the very earth of the fields. Here they were, come to squeeze his land from him in his extremity. He looked up at them sullenly, his eyes deep and enormous in his bony skull-like face. "I will not sell my land," he said. His uncle stepped forward. At this instant, the younger of Wang Long's two sons came creeping to the doorway upon his hands and knees. Since he had so little strength in these latter days, the child at times had gone back to crawling as he used to in his babyhood.
"Is that your lad?" cried the uncle. "The little fat lad I gave a copper to in the summer?"
And they all looked at the child, and suddenly Wang Long, who through all this time had not wept at all, began to weep silently, the tears gathering in great knots of pain in his throat and rolling down his cheeks.
"What is your price?"
he whispered at last.
Well, there were these three children to be fed, the children and the old man. He and his wife could dig themselves graves in the land and lie down in them and sleep. Well, but here were these. And then one of the men from the city spoke, a man with one eye blind and sunken in his face, and unctuously he said, "My poor man, we will give you a better price than could be got in these times anywhere for the sake of the boy who is starving. We will give you—" He paused, and then he said harshly, "We will give you a string of 100 pence for an acre."
Wang Long laughed bitterly. "Why, that," he cried, "that is taking my land for a gift. Why, I pay 20 times that when I buy land."
"Ah, but not when you buy it from men who are starving,"
said the other man from the city. He was a small, slight fellow with a high, thin nose, but his voice came out of him unexpectedly large and coarse and hard.
Wang Long looked at the three of them. They were sure of him, these men. What will not a man give for his starving children and his old father? The weakness of surrender in him melted into an anger such as he had never known in his life before. He sprang up and at the men as a dog springs at an enemy.
"I shall never sell the land," he shrieked at them. "Bit by bit I will dig up the fields and feed the earth itself to the children, and when they die I will bury them in the land. And I and my wife and my old father, even he, we will die on the land that has given us birth."
He was weeping violently, and his anger went out of him as suddenly as a wind, and he stood shaking and weeping. The man stood there smiling slightly, his uncle among them, unmoved. This talk was madness, and they waited until Wang's anger was spent. And then suddenly Olan came to the door, then spoke to them, her voice flat and commonplace as though every day such things were.
"The land we will not sell, surely," she said. "Else when we return from the south we shall have nothing to feed us. But we will sell the table and the 2 beds and the bedding and the 4 benches and even the cauldron from the stove. But the rakes and the hoe and the plow we will not sell, nor the land."
There was some calmness in her voice which carried more strength than all Wang Long's anger. And Wang Long's uncle said uncertainly,
"Will you really go south?"
At last the one-eyed man spoke to the others, and they muttered among themselves, and the one-eyed man turned and said,
"They are poor things, and fit only for fuel. 2 silver bits for the lot, and take it or leave it."
He turned away with contempt as he spoke, but Olan answered tranquilly, "It is less than the cost of 1 bed, but if you have the silver, give it to me quickly and take the things." The one-eyed man fumbled in his girdle and dropped into her outstretched hand the silver. And the 3 men came into the house, and between them they took out the table and the benches and the bed in Wang Long's room first with its bedding, and they wrenched the cauldron from the earthen oven in which it stood. But when they went into the old man's room, Wang Long's uncle stood outside. He did not wish his older brother to see him, nor did he wish to be there when the old man was laid on the floor and the bed taken from under him. When all was finished and the house was wholly empty, except for the 2 rakes and the 2 hoes and the plough in 1 corner of the middle room, Olan said to her husband, "Let us go while we have the 2 bits of silver, and before we must sell the rafters of the house and have no hole into which we can crawl when we return." And Wang Lung answered heavily, "Let us go." But he looked across the fields at the small figures of the men receding, and he muttered over and over, "At least I have the land. I have the land." 10. There was nothing to do but to pull the door tight upon its wooden hinges and fasten the iron hasp. All their clothes they had upon them. Into each child's hands Olan thrust a rice bowl and a pair of chopsticks, and the 2 little boys grasped at them eagerly and held them tight as a promise of food to come. Thus they started across the fields, a dreary small procession moving so slowly that it seemed they would never be to the wall of the town. The girl Wang Long carried in his bosom, until he saw that the old man would fall, and then he gave the child to Olan, and stooping under his father, he lifted him on his back and carried him, staggering under the old man's dry, wind-light frame. They went on in complete silence past the little temple with the 2 small stately gods within, who never noticed anything that passed. Wang Lung was sweating with his weakness in spite of the cold and bitter wind. This wind never ceased to blow on them and against them, so that the 2 boys cried of its cold. But Wang Lung coaxed them, saying, "You are 2 big men, and you are travelers to the south. There is warmth there, and food every day, white rice every day, for all of us, and you shall eat, and you shall eat." In time they reached the gate of the wall, resting continually every little way, and where Wang Lung had once delighted in its coolness, now he clenched his teeth against the gust of wintry wind that swept furiously through its channel, as icy water will rush between cliffs. Beneath their feet the mud was thick and speared through with needles of ice, and the little boys could make no headway, and Olan was laden with the girl and desperate under the weight of her own body. Wang Lung staggered through with the old man and set him down, and then went back and lifted each child and carried him through. And then, when it was over at last, his sweat poured out of him like rain, spending all his strength with it, so that he had to lean for a long time against the damp wall, his eyes shut and his breath coming and going quickly, and his family stood shivering and waiting about him. They were close to the gate of the great house now, but it was locked fast. The iron doors reared full to their height, and the stone lions gray and wind-bitten on either side. Upon the doorsteps lay cowering a few dingy shapes of men and women, who gazed famished upon the closed and barred gate. And when Wang Lung passed with his miserable little procession, one cried out in a cracked voice, "The hearts of these rich are hard like the hearts of the gods. They have still rice to eat, and from the rice they do not eat, they are still making wine while we starve." And another moaned forth, "Oh, if I had an instant strength in this hand of mine, I would set fire to the gates and to those houses and courts within, even though I burned in the fire. 1,000 curses to the parents that bore the children of Huang." But Wang Lung answered nothing to all this, and in silence they went on toward the south. When they had passed through the town and had come out on the southern side, and this they did so slowly that it was evening and near to darkness, they found a multitude of people going toward the south. Wang Lung was beginning to think of what corner of the wall they had better choose for sleeping as well as they could, huddled together, when he suddenly found himself and his family caught in a multitude, and he asked of one who pressed against him, "Where is all this multitude going?" And the man said, "We are starving people, and we are going to catch the fire wagon and ride to the south. It leaves from yonder house, and there are wagons for such as we for the price of less than a small silver piece." Fire wagons! One had heard of them. Wang Lung, in days past in the tea shop, had heard men tell of these wagons, chained one to the other and drawn neither by man nor beast, but by a machine breathing forth fire and water like a dragon. He had said to himself many times then that on a holiday he would go and see it. But with one thing and another in the fields there was never time, he being well to the north of the city. Then there was always distrust of that which one did not know and understand. It is not well for a man to know more than is necessary for his daily living. Now, however, he turned doubtfully to the woman and said, "Shall we also, then, go on this fire wagon?" They drew the old man and the children a little away from the passing crowd and looked at each other anxiously and afraid. At the instant's respite, the old man sunk upon the ground, and the little boys lay down in the dust, heedless of the feet trampling everywhere about them. Olan carried the girl child still, but the child's head hung over her arm with such a look of death on its closed eyes that Wang Lung, forgetting all else, cried out, "Is the little slave already dead?" Olan shook her head. "Not yet. The breath flutters back and forth in her. But she will die this night, and all of us, unless—" And then, as if she could say no other word, she looked at him, her square face exhausted and gaunt. Wang Lung answered nothing, but to himself he thought that another day of walking like this one, and they would all be dead by night. And he said with what cheer there was to be found in his voice, "Up, my sons, and help the grandfather up. We will go on the fire wagon and sit while we walk south." But whether or not they could have moved, none knows. Had there not come thundering out of the darkness a noise like a dragon's voice, and two great eyes puffing fire out, so that everyone screamed and ran. And pressing forward in the confusion, they were pushed hither and thither, but always clinging desperately together, until they were pushed somehow in the darkness, and in the yelling and crying of many voices, into a small open door, and into a box-like room. And then, with an incessant roaring, the thing in which they rode tore forth into the darkness, bearing them in its vitals. 11. With his two pieces of silver, Wang Lung paid for 100 miles of road, and the officer who took his silver from him gave him back a handful of copper pence, and with a few of these Wang Lung bought from a vendor, who thrust his tray of wares in at a hole in the wagon as soon as it stopped, 4 small loaves of bread and a bowl of soft rice for the girl. It was more than they had to eat at one time for many days, and although they were starved for food, when it was in their mouths, desire left them, and it was only by coaxing that the boys could be made to swallow. But the old man sucked perseveringly at the bread between his toothless gums. "One must eat," he cackled forth, very friendly to all who pressed about him as the fire wagon rolled and rocked on its way. "I do not care that my foolish belly is growing lazy after all these days of little to do. It must be fed. I will not die because it does not wish to work." And men laughed suddenly at the smiling, wizened little old man, whose sparse white beard was scattered all over his chin. But not all the copper pence did Wang Lung spend on food. He kept back all he was able to buy mats to build a shed for them when they reached the south. There were men and women in the fire wagon who had been south in other years, some who went each year to the rich cities of the south to work and to beg and thus save the price of food. And Wang Lung, when he had grown used to the wonder of where he was and to the astonishment of seeing the land whirl by the holes in the wagon, listened to what these men said. They spoke with the loudness of wisdom where others were ignorant.
"First you must buy 6 mats," said one, a man with coarse hanging lips like a camel's mouth. "These are 2 pence for 1 mat, if you are wise and do not act like a country bumpkin, in which case you will be charged 3 pence, which is more than is necessary, as I very well know. I cannot be fooled by the men in the southern cities, even if they are rich."
He wagged his head and looked about for admiration. Wang Lung listened anxiously. "And then?" he urged.
He sat squatting upon his haunches at the bottom of the wagon, which was, after all, only an empty room made of wood, and with nothing to sit upon, and the wind and the dust flying up through the cracks in the floor.
"Then," said the man, more loudly still, raising his voice above the din of the iron wheels beneath them, "then you bind these together into a hut, and then you go out to beg, first smearing yourself with mud and filth to make yourselves as piteous as you can."
Now, Wang Lung had never in his life begged of any man, and he disliked this notion of begging of strange people in the south. "One must beg?" he repeated.
"Ah, indeed," said the coarse-mouthed man. "But not until you have eaten. These people in the south have so much rice that each morning you may go to a public kitchen and for a penny hold as much as you can in your belly of the white rice gruel. Then you can beg comfortably and buy bean curd and cabbage and garlic."
Wang Lung withdrew a little from the others and turned himself about to the wall, and secretly with his hand in his girdle he counted out the pence he had left. There was enough for the 6 mats, and enough each for a penny for rice, and beyond that he had 3 pence left. It came over him with comfort that thus they could begin the new life. But the notion of holding up a bowl and begging of anyone who passed continued to distress him. It was very well for the old man and for the children and even for the woman, but he had his 2 hands. "Is there no work for a man's hands?" he asked of the man suddenly, turning about.
"Aye, work," said the man with contempt, and he spat upon the floor. "You can pull a rich man in a yellow rickshaw, if you like, and sweat your blood out with heat as you run, and have your sweat freeze into a coat of ice on you when you stand waiting to be called. Give me begging!"
And he cursed a round curse, so that Wang Lung would not ask anything of him further. But still it was a good thing that he had heard what the man said, for when the fire wagon had carried them as far as it would, and had turned them out upon the ground, Wang Lung had ready a plan. And he set the old man and the children against the long grey wall of a house which stood there, and he told the woman to watch them, and he went off to buy the mats, asking of this one and that where the market streets lay. At first he could scarcely understand what was said to him, so brittle and sharp was the sound which these southerners made when they spoke, and several times when he asked and they did not understand, they were impatient, and he learned to observe what sort of man he asked of, and to choose one with a kindlier face, for these southerners had tempers which were quick and easily ruffled. But he found the mat shop at last on the edge of the city, and he put his pennies down upon the counter as one who knew the price of the goods, and he carried away his roll of mats. When he returned to the spot where he had left the others, they stood there waiting. Although when he came, the boys cried out at him in relief, and he saw that they had been filled with terror in this strange place. Only the old man watched everything with pleasure and astonishment, and he murmured at Wang Lung,
"You see how fat they all are, these southerners, and how pale and oily are their skins. They eat pork every day, doubtless."
But none who passed looked at Wang Lung and his family. Men came and went along the cobbled highway to the city, busy and intent and never glancing aside at beggars, and every little while a caravan of donkeys came pattering by, their small feet fitting neatly to the stones, and they were laden with baskets of brick for the building of houses, and with great bags of grain crossed upon their swaying backs. At the end of each caravan, the driver rode on the hindermost beast, and he carried a great whip, and this whip he cracked with a terrific noise over the backs of the beasts, shouting as he did so.
And as he passed Wang Lung, each driver gave him a scornful and haughty look, and no prince could have looked more haughty than these drivers in their rough work coats as they passed by the small group of persons standing wondering at the edge of the roadway.
It was the especial pleasure of each driver, seeing how strange Wang Lung and his family were, to crack his whip just as he passed them, and the sharp explosive cut of the air made them leap up, and seeing them leap, the drivers guffawed. And Wang Lung was angry when this happened two or three times, and he turned away to see where he could put his hut. There were already other huts clinging to the wall behind them, but what was inside the wall, none knew, and there was no way of knowing. It stretched out long and gray and very high, and against the base the small mat sheds clung like fleas to a dog's back. Wang Lung observed the huts, and he began to shape his own mats this way and that, but they were stiff and clumsy things at best, being made of split reeds, and he despaired when suddenly Olan said, "That I can do. I remember it in my childhood." And she placed the girl upon the ground, and pulled the mats thus and thus, and shaped a rounded roof reaching to the ground, and high enough for a man to sit under and not strike the top, and upon the edges of the mats that were upon the ground she placed bricks that were lying about, and she sent the boys to picking up more bricks. When it was finished they went within, and with one mat she had contrived not to use, they made a floor, and sat down, and were sheltered. Sitting thus and looking at each other, it seemed less than possible that the day before they had left their own house and their land, and that these were now 100 miles away. It was a distance vast enough to have taken them weeks of walking, and at which they must have died, some of them, before it was done. Then the general feeling of plenty in this rich land, where no one seemed even hungered, filled them. And when Wang Lung said, "Let us go and seek the public kitchens," they rose up almost cheerfully and went out once more, and this time the small boys clattered their chopsticks against their bowls as they walked, for there would soon be something to put into them. And they found soon why the huts were built to that long wall, for a short distance beyond the northern end of it was a street, and along the street many people walked carrying bowls and buckets and vessels of tin, all empty. And these persons were going to the kitchens for the poor, which were at the end of the street and not far away. And so Wang Lung and his family mingled with these others, and with them they came at last to two great buildings made of mats, and everyone crowded into the open end of these buildings. Now in the rear of each building were earthen stoves, but larger than Wang Lung had ever seen, and on them iron cauldrons as big as small ponds. And when the great wooden lids were pried up, there was the good white rice bubbling and boiling, and clouds of fragrant steam rose up. Now when the people smelled this fragrance of rice, it was the sweetest in the world to their nostrils, and they all pressed forward in a great mass, and people called out, and mothers shouted in anger and fear lest their children be trodden upon, and little babies cried, and the men who opened the cauldrons roared forth, "Now there is enough for every man, and each in his turn." But nothing could stop the mass of hungry men and women, and they fought like beasts until all were fed. Wang Lung, caught in their midst, could do nothing but cling to his father and his two sons, and when he was swept to the great cauldron he held out his bowl, and when it was filled threw down his pence, and it was all he could do to stand sturdily and not be swept on before the thing was done. Then, when they had come to the street again and stood eating their rice, he ate and was filled, and there was a little left in his bowl, and he said, "I will take this home to eat in the evening." But a man stood near who was some sort of guard of the place, for he wore a special garment of blue and red, and he said sharply, "No, and you can take nothing away except what is in your belly." And Wang Lung marveled at this and said, "Well, if I have paid my penny, what business is it of yours if I carry it within or without me? The man said then,
"We must have this rule, for there are those whose hearts are so hard that they will come and buy this rice that is given for the poor, for a penny will not feed any man like this, and they will carry the rice home to feed to their pigs for slop, and the rice is for men and not for pigs."
Wang Lung listened to this in astonishment, and he cried, "Are there men as hard as this?" And then he said, "But why should any give like this to the poor? And who is it that gives?" The man answered then,
"It is the rich and the gentry of the town who do it. And some do it for a good deed for the future, that by saving lives they may get merit in heaven. And some do it for righteousness,